Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Emma LaVecchia spends her day overseeing 10 preschools around Greater Boston, and sometimes that means putting on a mask and grabbing crayons or craft paper or glue or doing whatever it takes to help out her teachers, because LaVecchia's Pine Village preschools are understaffed, like so many other childcare centers across Massachusetts and across the country. The childcare industry has been hit especially hard by this pandemic. We talked to Emma and to Amy O'Leary of Strategies for Children last May, when childcare centers were preparing to reopen. Now, with more people, including some of us at WBUR, preparing to return to work in person, will the industry be there? We've brought Emma and Amy back to talk about it, and we want to hear from you. Are you getting ready to go back to work in person? Have you recently done so? Are you having problems finding childcare? Are you worried about health and safety? Have you found a childcare that is delighting you? Maybe you're a childcare provider yourself. Call us, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Emma, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And Amy, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
So, Emma, what did it feel like to hear me tell everybody that you're trying to run 10 childcare centers and you're cutting and pasting and maybe getting glitter on your clothes in the classroom at the same time?
Those are the best of times. That's why we do this, you know? So I need to also say that I'm not the only person who's running 10 schools. We have an incredible admin team who also has been completely hands-on, boots in the ground, in the schools, doing whatever's needed. But, you know, I think being forced is the wrong word, but having to be back in the schools has actually been a blessing. It's really brought us all tighter. There's greater understanding of all of the struggles and the challenges that directors and teachers face every day. So it's just part of what's happening right now.
Amy, what we just heard from Emma, is that what you're hearing from other providers?
Absolutely. And while, yes, as directors, we often have roots as teachers, and it's important to go back, Emma's also trying to do many other jobs at the same time. And we're hearing this from across the state. It's not just one area. Directors are in the classrooms 8 to 4, which means, or 7:30 to 5:30, which means they're not doing the other parts of their job, which could include intake for September, you know, thinking about professional development for educators, and just finding educators. We have heard story after story of the crisis, which I know we've been talking about for many years, decades. I feel like it's really going to come to a head in the next few months, because we are seeing well-funded, well-supported programs having to close classrooms.
So listeners, what are your childcare stories right now? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join this conversation. Emma, Amy, there are so many questions I want to ask you, but as I just hear this part of it from the two of you, I find myself wondering, how are the kids? Emma.
So the kids, I feel like, are so incredibly resilient. And I'm so grateful to be able to give them what they need, which is consistent, loving, joyous care. And we have had a core group of teachers who were with us before the pandemic and came back when we were able to open back in August of 2020. It's hard for me to even keep track of the years. Those teachers have really held our school communities together, and those parents and the kids are so connected with our staff. I think just knowing that they can come every day and see the same faces and have that consistency and feel that love and see their friends again, that feels good to be able to give them. And so, I think they're okay.
I'm glad to hear that.
But one more thing, we are seeing this whole new kind of wave of kids who are coming in, the quote pandemic kids who were born during this time, or maybe hadn't started school, were under 15 months, And they've spent the last year and a half at home really isolated and not having social experiences. And they're coming into preschool now with not necessarily challenges, but a whole different social experience. And, you know, we are having to sort of retrain staff and help them understand what, you know, what these kids need now.
So what do you do differently for these kids, Emma? How does the day or the play that you choose or the activities that you choose, any of it differ given this new generation of little ones coming in?
Yeah. I kind of feel like we have to wrap them in bubble wrap, you know, like I think their transition into school, like the first several weeks is going to take a little bit longer than traditionally. I think that it's good to have them maybe in smaller classrooms with fewer kids to be able to manage a class so that maybe, you know, we have two or three kids working in a little pod instead of having all of them together. I think just being able to kind of ease them back in to a group setting with, you know, not crazy stimulation will help them.
I want to ask,
transition.
I want to ask listeners, do you feel like your little one's going to need to be wrapped in bubble wrap in the first few weeks of school of childcare if they go? What are you expecting from that experience? What are you worried about from that experience? What are you hoping for if you're preparing to return your child to childcare or to go to childcare for the first time? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Amy, I'm mindful as we're having this whole conversation, I mean, a huge piece of this just has to do with staffing and staffing shortages. And that's particularly interesting given that just before the break, and I don't know if you heard this, but we were having a conversation about a nursing strike, right? Nurses strike, where the issue was understaffing in the hospital. People know there are staffing shortages in childcare centers, but there's a lot behind why, and that's probably not easy to understand if you don't run childcare centers. So why are we seeing such a staffing shortage?
That's right. And I think I just want to reiterate what Emma said, and we use words like innovation, flexibility, creativity, sometimes describe the tech industry. But when you think about the heroic efforts of educators and directors who have really been keeping it going, and we've been using the kind of the tagline of, you know, childcare is keeping the economy going. Well, now is our chance to really pay up on what we've been talking about. So as you said, it's complex, right? Our funding model was not working before COVID. It's not working. It's you know, not going to work in the future. And especially around the workforce, we have programs competing with other industries who can offer $17, $19 an hour, you know, providing higher education opportunities. So part of it is the public dollars that have been, you know, previously available in the system have never been enough to cover the true cost of care. And then what we learned during the pandemic was most of the children are funded by parents' fees. And, you know, the answer cannot be that parents have to pay more in a state that we run number one or number two for childcare. And so it's really looking about this flexible business model. The Baker administration released a Future of Work report. And one of the second recommendation was about hybrid work and the demand for flexible childcare options, really thinking about how this business model can evolve. And so, that is going to be, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish that thought, Amy, and then I'm going to go to a call.
It's going to be trickier to do that than just kind of like changing the Excel spreadsheets we use, because if our funding model has been based on full enrollment, you know, children's attendance, and we are really going to shift that. If families are looking for partial day or 3 days a week, it's really going to upset the market, which was so tenuous to start with.
So I'm just going to feed this back to you, and then I'm going to go to a call, but I want to make sure I'm understanding this. So basically, the staffing model is predicated on a full childcare center on regular predictable hours with all that money regularly coming in. And now it's just not going to be like that anymore. And the business model has not caught up with that. Plus, we underpay, and finding new sources of revenue to pay teachers is just a pernicious lasting challenge. Is that a fair summary of what you said?
That's an excellent summary. Woo-hoo! And what I would also add is it's also parents' personal decisions as they're maybe thinking about September and maybe changing their mind. Those personal decisions, maybe not to send the child, are going to have these implementation and policy impacts that are not going to happen maybe on the same day, but, you know, are going to impact the financial bottom line for these programs.
All right. That's helpful. Thank you, Amy. I want to go to the phones here. 1-800-423-8255. Donna's calling in Acton. Donna, I think you're calling about a childcare worker, right?
Yes, my daughter Ruthie works for child care. She worked in the MGH system throughout the pandemic. She's tireless and dedicated to these children. They have just transitioned to Bright Horizons, and the management has been very supportive and wonderful throughout the pandemic. But the bottom line is they're just not paying her enough. She has to work in a restaurant on nights and weekends just in order to make a living wage. And it's just so sad. She loves the children. She loves her job. She went to college for this. She's got a bachelor's degree from Lesley. This is what she wants to do. But I just wish they could pay her more money.
Donna, thank you for that very pointed story. So, Emma, does that resonate?
Absolutely. I mean, our experience this year has been that wages have increased by about 15%. So
you mean hired?
Hired pre-pandemic. You know, I would say with a bachelor's, like this woman's daughter, for example, and a degree in early childhood, probably would have been hired around $19, $20 an hour. Now they're getting $25 an hour, $27 an hour. So, you know, there is a huge increase in demand for teachers and they should be paid that kind of money. They should be making a living wage. You know, it's very difficult, as you and Amy both described. The model has not caught up to that demand yet.
If you could pick one thing to change right now, like if I could just free up my model by doing X, what would be the most effective single change you could make right now, Emma?
Oh, I don't know that there's one change. I mean, I would love to take the perception of early childhood educators and raise that to a higher level so that we could acknowledge our staff the way they deserve to be acknowledged, with salaries that are living wage. And, you know, I don't think that parents are going to be able to absorb all of that cost. I'm not sure what the solution is for that. Our mission here has always been around career development and assuring that teachers understand and feel like they are professionals and that this is their career.
Let's go back to the phones here. We've got more callers in. Emma, thank you. So we've got 800-423-8255. We've got Eden on the line in Manchester by the Sea. Eden, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Dr. Eden Davies. I'm a child and family psychologist up on the North Shore, and I have three little girls aged 2, 4, and 5. And so we're all going to be re-entering the school system. My little one, grew up during this COVID time, so she hasn't had that sort of experience. So I thought I would chime in about some of the things that we've been doing over the summer to sort of prepare them for that transition.
Tell me one in particular, Eden.
Yeah, getting them used to new caregivers. We've tried, you know, hiring a lot of different babysitters. You know, just like, you know, an hour here, 2 hours there, short time frames, just so that, like, they can get used to being with new people instead of, you know, just our family.
Eden, thank you for that. And thank you for reminding us that there can be some intentionality, Amy, to preparing a child to go into early education and care. Other advice that you would give parents, Amy?
You know, listening to you earlier this week about thinking this is the third year of the COVID impact on education really hit me, because I think as we're doing this, we're not calculating that in our heads, especially around early education, because that's the lifespan of some of the children we're talking about. So I think that's exactly right. Getting to know, connecting with the providers, but also kind of keeping this assume positive intent mentality. You know, we've seen, you know, the photos of the whole world is short-staffed. Be kind. I think also what Emma brought up is how careful this transition needs to be. In September, with transitions, everyone's learning new rules. There's separation anxiety. So parents kind of keeping it together and making sure they are also talking to their children about that we're going to a safe place, that I'm going to know what's going on in the classroom and I'm going to be checking in. And just one more thing to think about, the first week may go great and you may breathe a sigh of relief, but then week three may be a challenge. So just managing all of our expectations and taking stock and taking the time for those smooth transitions.
I feel like people should take a note on that week three thing, having had a couple of children go through early education and care. So flagging that one for you, listeners. I'd like to go back to the phones here. We've got Kathy on the line in Somerville. Kathy, go ahead.
Hi. I have been a nanny, or I've worked in child care for 13 years. I'm actually calling from the parking lot. I just dropped off my Section 8 application, and I just wanted to say that I've never, in my years of working in childcare, I've never been able to make enough money to provide for myself and my own son. The last daycare that I worked at, despite all my years of experience and having a bachelor's degree in child development, I was only making $17 an hour, which put me just enough over the poverty line that I didn't qualify for food stamps or state health insurance. But I wasn't even making enough money to rent one bedroom in an apartment for my son and myself to share, let alone, you know, affording health insurance for myself or being able to buy food to eat.
Kathy, for our listeners who don't know, Section 8 is an affordable housing application. You said you're in the parking lot. You just filled out your application. How are you? You okay?
Yeah, you know, I'm okay. Yeah.
All right. Listen, we'll be thinking about you. Thank you for calling. And we'll think about your son, too.
Tiziana, if I can just pick up on that, one of the opportunities we see right now is prioritizing early educators to access a subsidy so that they can go back to work and that their children can have care. This is something we have heard over and over in the past 2 weeks. I could open up another classroom if this one teacher could get some support in providing childcare. So we can have a whole other conversation about how early educators are eligible for public assistance. A study has shown in Massachusetts 37% of early educators are for some kind of public assistance. But we think this could be one solution for this immediate crisis to support educators who are doing the work every day.
So just to clarify for listeners, that was Emma speaking, right? Emma.
It was Amy.
Oh, Amy. Sorry. I'm sorry. See, I'm glad we clarified because I got
Me
confused.
Too.
I was talking. So Amy, what is one step people can take if they are interested in trying to avail themselves, child care providers, if they're trying to avail themselves of those resources?
I think we are looking to think about a state policy change, but I would say to tell your story. And I think Kathy, for calling from the parking lot, you know, sometimes we don't talk about real numbers because, you know, it can seem like, oh, I can't believe I'm not eligible for this or that. So just using real numbers, understanding the cost of living, because we've been talking about low pay, but really making that real to people, I think, is so incredibly powerful. And at Strategies for Children, we're happy to help to support people, to provide testimony, to connect with your state legislators, any help we can provide to promote and highlight your stories.
Thank you for that, Amy. So Emma, now I'm going to turn back to you. And I think I want to ask you, Emma, at the very beginning of this conversation, we talked about the fact that you have a big set of administrative responsibilities in addition to helping out in the classroom because you're short-staffed. How are you doing after 16 months of this, after your child care centers, you know, we talked last May. How are you putting one foot in front of the other, and can you keep going and get through this next wave?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, we're all okay. We keep saying we're working harder than we've ever worked before, but we've been through tough times and we will get through this. And, you know, we've had to make some really tough decisions and we might have to make more tough decisions. And I think one thing that we learned in this last year and a half is around communication with our families, communication with our staff, communication amongst ourselves here, that if we can keep talking and keep being real and open and, talking about our challenges, but also talking about planning and, you know, the reality of things and how can we help and, talking about our policies with families and the way things need to be, that has kept us healthy. And, you know, we've gone through serious financial challenges this last year. And, you know, we'll be, I think we'll be okay. We're still here. So it's just incredible. And I think maybe when it's all over and we look back, we'll all fall apart. But right now, you know, we're in it, and we're just doing, everybody's doing what they have to do. Everybody.
Amy, just in a sentence, this is a time where it can be of great adventure for children. What's one thing that could be fantastic for kids in childcare this year?
I think one, for other adults to recognize what other adults are doing for children and families. And I think it is, it's providing these safe spaces with high quality early education and care to bring back some of that joy of learning and really the wonder that's going to keep us going throughout this pandemic.
Oh, thanks. Amy O'Leary, Director of the Early Education for All campaign at Strategies for Children, and Emma LaVecchia, co-founder of Pine Village Preschool. Thank you so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, folks, that's our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Jamie Bologna, Chris Siderick, Walter Wuthman, Amanda Beland, and Cynthia Betubiza. We had help from Ali Audette and Stephen Gelman. And today was Stephen's last day with us, and we wish him good luck and Godspeed. Marquise Neal is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Tisiana Deering. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.